You're listening to Alliance for the Brave, honoring, serving, and empowering those who have served in the line of duty. Tonight's program is presented by Jim Blythe, Certified Senior Advisor, BX3 Foundation, BX3 Brain Science, and the Texas Veterans Commission. Learn more about our mission, our partners, and how you can plug in with us at AllianceForTheBrave.com. And now back to the conversation.
Welcome back to the Empower Hour. We are here with my lovely co-host, Robin Balotito, and we have a special guest tonight, guys. And if you were listening in our first segment, Michael Bowen, who is now a reverend and minister, but a Dallasite, and was a part of the SMU Mustangs 1990 team with 60 receptions. And for those of you that want to look up the miracle on Mockingbird, that's we're sitting next to
well,
him.
As grand as that part of it is, I think it's even grander that he was a part with me, the class of 86, where the death penalty came crashing down and rocked all of NCAA football.
Oh, there, yeah, absolutely. And the person that really, probably, were you the only one that did that, that left and then came back?
I think there were a couple other, I think Trey Giller came back, he went to OU and came back, and I think a few people stayed, Brett Kershaw, Mitchell Gleiber.
Oh, yeah, Brett Kershaw,
and
man,
a couple of those people
names.
Stayed, and they just went through the 87 year with no football, and then our 88 year, we had practiced the whole season, no football games, and then we came back in 89.
Yeah, they just teased you for a year.
Yeah,
but Michael Bowen is back in studio with us, and you know, we were talking during the break, Michael, about that era of NCAA football. There maybe wasn't enough policing going on. Players could get away with a lot of stuff, and you were talking about how the temptation started in high school. So we'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, with my problem with addiction and drugs, it all started with just experimenting with alcohol, and then after the alcohol, marijuana, which led to the harder drugs, cocaine, ecstasy, methamphetamine.
Where did the opportunity come from? Where was the influence? Where did the influence start? I mean, you were a great student in high school, star athlete, came from a great family. So where did this dark demon side come in? When did they knock on the door?
It wasn't. It never was a dark demon at first. And that's the thing, that it's always presented to us fun, exciting, new, check this out, try this. Hey, just a little bit's not going to hurt you. And, you know, back then, there wasn't as much education on it as there is now, and we don't know as much about the side effects and the destruction that it causes. I maybe in some circles you knew, but it wasn't as advertised as it is now. But even that people know it, the children and the teenagers and stuff know it now, they're still a lot of the times are going to think, oh, that's for someone else. That's not for me. Mm. I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to try it. And so I just began experimenting, and I found something in it that I really liked. That was fun and exciting at first, because I never knew what it was going to end up doing to me and doing to my life, and what it was going to take from me and where it was going to take me, and the darkness that's on the other side of that bait that was there. I mean, it's just like fishing, you know. Mm-hmm. It looks like you're a fish swimming around in the water, and you're used to eating all these juicy worms.
Until the big great white comes
all of a sudden,
up and bites you.
Yeah, that too. But until you look at that worm, you think, that's good, and you bite it, and there's a hook in it, and then it hooks you.
Yeah,
and then it reels you in.
That's an interesting analogy.
And it's the truth, and that's exactly what happens.
When I think to Robin's point in the first segment, too, is we have a lot of veterans that is our mission, veterans and first responders. And so the amazing lesson and the things, if you're listening tonight, that if you're dealing with a veteran, or you are a veteran or have a veteran in your family who is dealing with addiction, or maybe what are some of the signs if you don't know, but there's such a large propensity. I was reading earlier today, Robin, 1 in 3 veterans that come back from war have PTSD, and 1 in 3 become addicted to some form of either drug or alcohol.
Well, and it extends even beyond that. Those statistics are shocking in itself, but if you even dig deeper, Kim, as a lot of our hosts do on the show, spouses are experimenting to find a way to deal with what they don't know how to deal with their veteran who is struggling. And then all the attention is there and not even on their children. So children of veterans' families are segueing into alcohol, drugs as their escape because they don't know how to help their dad or mom that's struggling coming back from service either. So this is really interesting, Michael. You know, during the break too, Kim and I were asking you about if you're experimenting with all this stuff, how come your parents didn't know, or how did they not know?
Well, because everything else on the outside looked great. You know, I was playing football, scoring touchdowns, and I was doing well in school, and I wasn't really getting in any kind of trouble.
So you were a functional experimenter.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And I think, you know, before we start the show, and I think this is really important, Robin, and this is something that's gonna really take with me after this, Michael, is that football provided for you the rush, the adrenaline,
absolutely,
the excitement, the fame, the adoration. And so after you graduated, you were saying you got drafted by the Canadian Football League, correct?
Yes.
And you went up and you got cut.
I got cut after a week, and it would just it devastated me. I think the reason why I got cut is because I didn't really take it as seriously as I should have. And I didn't go to the CFL until 1991 in, I think, June. And so that time from December to June, I was...
You were happy.
Here
you're
we
living
go.
The life.
Well, I was partying like a rock star.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I was drinking and going to the clubs. And then about 3, 4, 5 weeks before the season, I said, I need to get in shape. I tried to get in shape, but I was still drinking and doing that. I didn't take it serious enough. And when I got there, I was out of shape. I wasn't prepared, and I got cut. And it pretty much, it destroyed me as far as my identity, who I was. I was depressed.
Was that because you felt embarrassed? You didn't know who you were without that stigmatism or that title to others around you?
I just knew that the game that I loved so much was over forever. After I got cut, I just knew, and I saw the people that I was going up against. These were professionals. These guys were serious, and I was serious about it, but I wasn't as serious as they were, and I knew there was no way I was ever going to make it again. And so I went back to Dallas, and I kind of went into a depression and trying to figure out what am I going to do.
And that's where, and so to the comparison I was trying to get to is that crack cocaine for you at that point, because you were so depressed, and that became where you found those attributes, the rush, the adrenaline, the excitement again, right? But what it did, and we'll talk about the, you know, the two stints in prison we're going to go into, but I mean, that really became your, that's where you felt normal again.
And how deep did you spiral down before you realized how deep you were?
Well, it was pretty quick. You know, when I had been experimenting with cocaine and I had tried crack a couple of times in college during the off seasons. I would go into the inner cities and find it and go to a crack house and smoke, maybe, you know, for a few hours, but I'd always come back, and have a lot of control over it. But it gave me that adrenaline, that rush. You know, when you're scoring touchdowns in front of 80,000 fans and you're feeling that adrenaline, and you're able to alleviate that aggression within yourself and that fight and stuff to try to replace that is very hard. And I did find it in that. Also, another thing about it was the fear. The fear was great when I was putting myself in those dangerous situations. I really fell in love with the fear of it and the adrenaline. And I liked being scared. I liked the uncertainty. It took me to a high level. And I was as much addicted to that as I was to the drugs, but also I think more so it was an escapism that it helped me escape from those feelings of loneliness, of not measuring up, of disconnect within myself. I had a disconnect within myself. I was trying to feel something. I was empty, and football had filled it for a while, and when that was gone, I was trying everything I could find, everything I could to try to fill that, and I couldn't find it.
Michael, before we go to break quickly, what was the breaking point for you?
As far as I've had many of them.
I mean, we'll get many. I think where we want to go to the one, because we're going to get on the other side. On the other side of this break is, at what point was chasing the fear and the adrenaline of the fear, was that enough? And you realize that, okay, my life is out of control. I've lost everything. And what brought you back?
Okay. Well, I mean, this is not something that was that was a few years or a little bit of time. This lasted 25 years of my life.
Wow.
I would use drugs and wipe out my entire life. I would lose my house, my cars, everything, relationships, everything. I'd end up homeless on the streets, smoking crack, and I'd hit a bottom. And I'd either go to rehab early on in the early years, or I'd go to jail and then later prison. And but I had many of them. And every time that I would hit a bottom, go to rehab, get out of rehab, I would really believe in myself that it would never happen again. Or then I would go to jail and I'd think, okay, that was really bad. Oh, this won't ever happen again. That's bad enough. I've hit my bottom. And then again, there would be another one, then prison. And then, you know, I build my life back up. But I get to that point where I should be happy, but I was not. I was still missing something. There was something that I was missing, and I couldn't put my finger on it, and I couldn't find it. And so, you know, I've just created this life, and it's supposed to be so good, but if there's something missing, and so I would wreck it. Mm-hmm. I have to do it again. And it just became a cycle of, it's called the cycle of addiction. And I'd get to that point, and then I would just destroy it, wipe it out. And I can't tell you how many times I did that. And you can imagine what that was like for the people, for my loved ones, yeah, later on my children and my family and my good friends. And, you know, everybody would see it and they would believe it because I believed it. I believed it would never happen again, but I could never hold on long enough because I didn't have the right skills. I didn't have the right things to help me overcome it.
All right, and I think at that point we're going to take a break. I'll throw it to you here, Kim. But when we come back, we're going to find out what the it was missing.
Just saying that. We're going to find out what the it was that was missing. We'll be right back after a word from our partners.
He was a famous trumpet man from all Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was a top.